The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
The kingdom is not safe.
I'm coming.
Me too. I'll drive.
I'll bring the snacks!
Quick question. Is the whole putting us in mortal danger going to be a regular thing?
What would I do without you? You'll always have me.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I'm Aislinn Addington.
And I'm Tobin Addington. And we are here today with, is this our first sequel to a movie we've covered?
Yes.
Yes,
we like
done
we did
sequels.
Ocean's 8 and stuff.
Right.
And but Aliens.
That's right. Very early in our run. We're here to talk about Frozen 2, the mega hit of 2019 and probably 2020 as well. The sequel to the original Frozen, a movie that I know better than I probably should. Aislinn, what's your history with the Frozen franchise?
I'm very comfortable with the amount that I know of Frozen. I had just moved home to finish my dissertation when the first movie hit, because I remember hearing Let It Go on the radio thinking, well, one, I can tell that's Idina Menzel because I'm a Rent fan.
Yeah, sure.
And so I understood the voice, but then I was like, why is that coming out of the radio? Makes no sense. And then we heard it every day for the next 4 years.
Right.
And you have a child who, at least one, who is a really big Frozen fan.
Big Frozen fan.
And I feel like she and I are kind of the only... Well, no, you can cut this out. The only pure fans in the family.
Wow. Well, what? I'm so curious what you mean by that.
I feel like...
Pure not being a word you use about yourself very often. So I'm...
True. I feel like as one does with trends of any kind, there's an ebb and a flow and a hype and a I like it, but kind of thing. And I feel like my... love of the first one is pretty, has been pretty consistent. But I also don't live with a young person who watches it every day. So me watching it, let's say once a month with your child, I understand the frequency is still much different than what's in your house. And so I get that there could be easily be Frozen fatigue.
Sure.
But I love the first one, and I love being in the car with your children when the soundtrack is on and not being allowed to sing, but it pointed out whose favorite song is when, and I don't know. It's all really good memories for me.
Well, as we've talked about on the show before, I went to film school with the writer and co-director of both Frozen and Frozen 2. So I have the kind of complicated feelings one has when a peer of yours, a friend of yours who you really like, has astronomical success and you wins Oscars and directs billion-dollar movies, and you feel yourself really, truly, honestly, very happy for them, and also that the sting of that too, right? Like it's a two-sided thing, and I've long mostly made peace with that over time. So there's, I guess there is some more complication in my case. I will note that my daughter right now, as we record, is wrapped up in the Frozen blanket that you sent her for Christmas.
Oh, that I made her for Christmas.
For Christmas. She's cuddled up in that right now.
Made and sent, but didn't wrap because it's been a hard season.
My biggest memory of the soundtrack is also in the car with the kids, but it had to do with we moved from New York to Montana when my daughter was one, just about to turn one. And she was not used to being in the car very much because we lived in New York. And so she hated being in the car. And for the 20 minutes it took to drive from our house out to our mom's house, who was going to babysit her, she just screamed the whole way, unless either there was a train on the train tracks next to us and we could point that out and she'd be mesmerized by the train, or Let It Go was playing on repeat. So it was a soothing thing.
A blessing and a curse.
That way. Yeah. Yeah. So were you excited for Frozen 2 or where were you at that way?
I was worried, as I kind of always am when something when something that does not have pre-existing next chapters. So yes. Like Hunger Games.
Right.
Was a whole thing already before it was any movies, or Harry Potter, so when something that is and or becomes a phenomenon has new material attached to it, like that kind of sequel makes me nervous.
Right.
Also, just anything with a number after it, I don't know. It just makes me feel like, And I don't know why, because there are certainly – well, here's the difference. Dirty Dancing Havana Nights was not called Dirty Dancing 2.
No.
Right? It was called Dirty Dancing Havana Nights. And
that's the name of the film, right.
That allows it, for me, the distance to be its own thing and to be delightful in its own way.
You Frozen. Don't come with a lot of baggage to it because it's distancing itself from the original.
Yes. And so
okay, I get
Frozen
it. I get
2, I don't know. It just seems like it's always going to be that second one.
Right. It kind of implies it's going to be just like a Frozen 2 or like Superman 2. It's like more Frozen, more Superman.
And a cash grab.
Yeah, right.
And sometimes I'm there for it. I'm thinking of things that are very fan pleasing. I'm a proud contributor to the Veronica Mars Kickstarter.
Yes, you are.
Is that movie, which we should do maybe, is that movie an amazing film on its own? Not entirely, in part because it was serving the fans. And there's too many of us that we have too many ideas.
Okay.
So I guess, long story short, I was excited and skeptical at the same time. I wish there was a word for that. How about you?
I was cautiously excited, I suppose mostly because my daughter was so excited to go to it that I caught the bug. Also, I've had quite recently good experiences with number two movies, particularly Paddington 2, which is, in my estimation, an absolute masterpiece of a film, maybe the best film of 2017. Or 2018, whenever it was released here. So I was, cautiously, maybe a little more than cautiously optimistic. I had a feeling, given that Jen was behind it, that it was going to be good. Whether or not it lived up to the original, or the songs were as catchy, or all that kind of stuff that people, and of course it is a cash grab. I mean, this is Disney, and the movie did make more than $1 billion. And she was the first woman to direct a movie that made more than $1 billion. All those scores, like the audience demanded a sequel by all the tickets and merchandise that they bought, and a sequel is what they got.
It's true. Now, did I send you the picture of me at the theater?
No.
Okay, sorry, I should have. It was, late matinee, early evening.
Okay.
At the tiny theater in my tiny town, which I bet even if I went to Star Wars right now, it wouldn't be full. Like, I've never been in a full auditorium there.
Right.
We went to this $1 billion movie. There were 5 other people there.
Right.
And I got the kids snack pack.
Okay.
Because it gives you an appropriate amount of popcorn. Which is like 3 grown-up handfuls. A tiny soda, which is the appropriate amount of soda for me.
Right.
And Welch's fruit snacks. And I, of course, came in with a jar of wine in my purse. So I took a picture of my jar of wine and my kids' snack pack. God,
that's amazing.
And that's how I enjoyed Frozen 2.
Oh, I love that so much.
And I encourage everyone to do the same.
Libby and I took both kids to the movie, and I have never seen my daughter sit up so when she watches live theater, she sits forward at the edge of her seat, just enraptured. And movies, usually she's sitting back, she gets kind of tired, and she'll lay her head on you, and it's a little less engaging. She was basically sitting on top of the person in front of her through the entire movie. And partway through, she's a very active viewer. And partway through, there's a shot where they stumble upon an old wrecked ship, and she shouts, she's not spoken a word in the movie until that ship comes up, and she turns to her friend who we brought with us, and she turns to her and said, "That's their parents' ship." Like maybe 8 or 10 seconds before it's at all confirmed by the movie, like. You know, then in the next 10 seconds, a line is spoken. But she said it right away as the shot
came
up.
She gets it.
She got it. And then all throughout the theater around us, all these kids started to whisper, "Oh, that's a parent ship. That's a parent ship." And then Elsa, whoever says it in the movie, and it was confirmed. And I thought, oh, good job. Good job.
Nice work.
So that I needed no beverage to get
to make
that
it
high.
Magical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now that you've brought up a plot point, I do want to get into it. So let's do our other segments.
Okay.
Tobin, can I have a bit or two bits of history on this film?
Yeah. So two tiny bits in addition to the things we've talked about. First, this is the Frozen 2 trailer is the most viewed animated movie trailer of all time. And in the top 20 of the most viewed trailers ever, which is just sort of fun. And then the other thing is that the Frozen 2 opened to the highest grossing Thanksgiving weekend ever. It opened to $123.7 million in 5 days in the United States alone. And it beat the previous record holder was, the previous record holder was Hunger Games Catching Fire with $103 million. So by $20 million, by the budget of about three independent movies, this movie outgrossed the previous record holder for Thanksgiving weekend. So way to go, Jen. Good job, everybody. Way to go, Disney.
Yeah, that's intense.
Here we go. Aislinn, could you take us through the women involved in major roles in Frozen 2?
I would love to. Starting with actors. Kristen Bell, Idina Menzel, Evan Rachel Wood, Martha Plimpton, and Rachel Matthews. Co-director, Jennifer Lee. Writers, Jennifer Lee and Kristen Anderson Lopez. Original songs by Kristen Anderson Lopez. And casting by Jamie Sparrow Roberts. Now, is that the same songwriter as previously?
Yes, she and her husband are the writers of the songs.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
And they both get a story by credit this time around. In addition with some other dudes who we don't mention on our show.
Don't need to.
Not that we don't mention those dudes in particular.
Everyone else mentions them.
It's just dudes. We just don't mention the dudes from that list. So anyway, that's why. And as I understand it, they were integral in the story in the first time around, but did not, you know, they went out of their way. The production went out of their way to give them credit.
Didn't. In the negotiation, they did not get the story.
Exactly. Right.
Gotcha. Okay. You know, I'm $1 billion, everyone knows. But Tobin, could you tell us, what is this movie about?
Yeah, this is the briefest plot rundown. I copied and pasted from IMDb because it's still the holidays and, like, life is busy. So Anna, Elsa, Kristoff, Olaf, and Sven leave Arendelle to travel to an ancient autumn-bound forest of an enchanted land. They set out to find the origin of Elsa's powers in order to save their kingdom.
That is kind of what it's about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, broad strokes here.
So just real quick, something that hit me in the movie and after the movie that relates to your daughter's revelation.
Okay.
Is that, yes, there were some things. I think I knew from reading about it. I knew who Evan Rachel Wood was.
Uh-huh.
So I knew that the parents, kind of legacy of the parents, was going to come back. But then for about 15 minutes in the film, I really congratulated myself for figuring out, we should say, like, spoilers all around here.
Yeah, of course.
For figuring out that the mom was part of the, like, I don't know the right word, but First Nations type people.
Right.
And that, you know, that it was the nobility, the royal family on the Arendelle side that had done a bad thing.
Right.
I mean, that's just any kind of colonial, that's what happened. But I was really proud of myself for a few minutes. And then it was like the other side of my brain was like, hey, this is a children's movie. Like, don't get too excited that you figured it out. Like, calm down.
Right.
And then this morning I was getting my nails done, and they are Frozen inspired. Check out Twitter, nice. I suppose. I'll post them for my Frozen nails. And the woman doing nails next in the next little desk over also congratulated herself for figuring. So she's like, well, I figured this out at the beginning, blah, blah. And I didn't, because it was not kind or necessary, though it was true, to say, yeah, it was a kid's movie. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is congratulations to everyone who figured out the plot.
Yes.
You're all smart.
We'll all be smart together.
We can all be smart together. So this is a sequel.
It is a sequel. We are back again.
Oh, so when I liked it,
yeah,
and I'm happy to talk about the things that I liked.
Yeah,
I didn't love it.
No, I did not.
And the parts that I think that's what it is. Maybe I should say that differently. There are elements of it that I really love, There were also elements that I didn't care for, or that just didn't do anything for me. So. That levels out, that Etch-a-Sketches out to me as a, yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we have this forum to kind of maybe highlight a few of those things that really did, that I think are innovative and
yes,
perhaps revolutionary and helpful and fun.
Yes. I think that's an excellent idea. I had a sort of inverse reaction to yours to the sort of opening of the movie and getting the sense of what the movie was going to be about with our forest folk and our Arendelle folk. But my thought was, oh God, I hope this doesn't turn out to be like, you get a shot early on of the dam that the Arendelle folk built for the forest folk. And you're like, and I thought to myself, oh God, is this going to turn out to be that the dam was the greatest thing that ever happened to these people? And like, I was worried it was going to reinforce, colonial perspectives. So I was pleasantly surprised but I was pleased when it was the inverse as the movie went along.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, and maybe I wasn't as scared of that because one of the headlines I read that, and I didn't read the article, was about their sort of research into
groups
that have lived on that land and getting that kind of, apologies, I didn't read the whole article, so I don't know how in-depth it was, but to whatever extent getting the permission of those folks to represent them on screen.
Okay, I see.
So that maybe that's why I wasn't scared that it was going to be pro-colonial.
Right. I guess I would have seen those articles if it had been that, although we were there opening day, so maybe they had that time
that's
to
true.
Be
written. See, and I absolutely waited because I wasn't ready at the time. Okay. Can I just tell you my favorite part?
Yeah, let's just do that. Let's just talk about favorite parts and issue parts. Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, I am so excited for several of the things they did with Christoph.
Okay. Yes. Like what? Tell me a couple of those.
That he has an entire power ballad.
Yes.
Which is meant to be humorous in some ways, right? That's one of the winks to the parents. This is an 80s music video.
Right.
But it's all about his feelings.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying anything other people haven't said. But he's allowed to be in his feelings in a way that I don't think we give many characters, but particularly male characters, that much time and breath to like wander through insecurity.
Right, right.
And that insecurity is part of who he is, but does not overwhelm him. I mean, in the moment it does, but you know what I mean? Like it's not a character flaw. It's just part of his humanity.
Yeah. Right.
And so I loved that. And then in the funny one part of it is that I love that Sven is a backup singer, but like Sven is the same voice.
Yes.
So he recorded several tracks.
Right.
To be his own backup singer. Like,
right, right.
As someone who talks foreign to my dog all the time, like that I really loved. And then
which is a recurring theme with Christoph and Sven, is that he's always doing his voice talking back and forth. So it makes sense that he's going to be the backup singer. Yeah.
Totally makes sense. But I think it's, you know, again, true of me as a dog owner. It's also true. I am fortunate enough to work across the hall from a great duo of a human and a service dog. And as you walk down the hall, my colleague Colin is always talking to or as the dog.
Yes. Okay.
Throughout the day.
I love it.
So
I love it.
That really resonated. And then the other piece of that, that I loved and sort of, I didn't tear up, but like I had an emotional reaction to was there's a part where there is some sort of, it's not a battle, but some sort of danger, something, they're fighting something. Mm-hmm. And Sven and Christoph come barreling through and like pick Anna up, but then say to her, what do you need?
Right, right, right.
Rather than taking her out of the fight entirely or taking over the fight. But like coming in and asking her what she needs to be successful, I thought was just beautiful.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not saying anything new. Other people have said this, but I loved that. In contrast, I did not love Olaf.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Can I say one quick thing about the power ballad?
And then let's go into Olaf. Yeah, please tell me what you liked, and then we'll do one that we didn't like.
I to echo your feelings about the power ballad, I thought it was one of the things I liked about it was that the joke wasn't that he was having feelings, or even what his feelings were. The joke was the way he was expressing them. It's sort of the mode as opposed to the actual things themselves. And this, I think, is true in so much of Jen's work. We've talked about her twice before this what's the Oprah, big Oprah movie? What was the big Oprah movie? Giant Oprah and Reese and Mindy Kaling.
Yeah, no, I see it. I don't see the name of it.
Time.
Wrinkle in Time.
Wrinkle in Time. Okay. Right. I was thinking Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but that's a different movie.
That's different.
She takes her stories take emotions very seriously, take people's emotions and their sort of working out of their feelings, you know, very seriously, more seriously than some other movies, I think. And I thought that it was a nice way to express that. Also, I really liked – so Sven is my favorite character in Frozen. When my daughter asks who everybody's favorite character is, and most people aren't allowed to have the same as anybody else's, I kind of landed on Sven, which I don't mind. And she's always called Sven Spen, like S-P-E-N.
Yes.
So Sven is my favorite character. And I liked how much Sven there was in this movie and how present he was without them making him a talking animal except through Christoph's voice, and yet he has his own personality and his own sort of, you know, he has his own agency, and I thought that was Sven was very well handled in this movie, which I was watching for particularly.
Agree, and I love the they sort of meet their counterparts a little bit, which didn't always work for me because I don't remember the names of the humans and what was their purpose other than to get like of straight to DVD spinoff, but
Disney Plus. Loved, thank you very much.
Oh, there you go. I love the scenes with all the reindeer.
Yes, yes.
And Sven kind of joining back up with. I really liked that.
It's hard.
So.
Yeah. So let's talk Olaf then.
Oh, laugh. Now, again, you know you've watched me watch this movie.
I have.
To this day, Olaf's one-liners in Frozen give me the giggles.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I like to think of myself as a love expert or whatever he says, just randomly. Oh, my God. So I liked the quirky, dippy, dopey Olaf.
Right.
I felt like they decided between the two films to make Olaf the voice of the child audience.
Uh-huh.
In a way, and maybe he, you tell me because you are the scholar of film, maybe he was in the first one and I just didn't get that, but this, I felt like I was being hit over the head. I felt like they had taken Olaf and, like my dog takes the stuffing out of the dog toys, turned mm-hmm. it into a puppet to make their points about being young in the world. And it did not work for me.
Uh-huh.
Period.
That's interesting. I thought he was funny. Olaf has never been my favorite part.
Right. That's why I'm interested in your opinion.
Yeah. And so he didn't bother me anymore in this. I did love his recap. There's a moment when he recaps Frozen to the forest folk and goes through the whole movie, a la C-3PO in Return of the Jedi. And they're all the Arendellians who have been trapped in the forest for a while too are, you know, the guy's tearing up as he hears the Anna, you know, like he's
right
into it with, and I thought that was great and beautifully handled. And I did tear up when Olaf died. I was softer on Olaf because I didn't have a really strong attachment to him in the previous. I find Olaf to grate on me the more I watch Frozen.
Right.
So I was pleased, or I guess I wasn't pleased. I was pleased by the part where he does the recap, and the rest of it didn't bother me any more than I expected.
Usually
it
does.
To. Yeah.
I had forgotten about the recap. Thank you. That was pretty adorable.
Yeah, I thought that was maybe the best scene in the movie.
Speaking of Olaf dying.
Yeah.
Olaf dies because Elsa dies.
Right.
Right.
Because it's his magic, her magic that's keeping him frosty.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And so thinking about Anna's journey, like that was really intense. And then all the underwater stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because drowning, not that anyone enjoys it, but in particular makes me quite uncomfortable. We haven't talked about it here, but we know we agree. We have a lake versus ocean thing.
Yes.
Right? You and I?
We do.
And so, yeah, that was, as a grown human, very scary.
Yes.
What was the reaction in a room full of children? And what did you think of the intensity of the stakes, I guess?
It's interesting because my kids don't, so far in movies, with the exception of E.T. leaving at the end of E.T., which I did not show my kids, having been scarred.
I was just
going to
say, how did E.T. make it into your home?
I was out of town and Libby showed E.T. to the children and I got a call and they're, you know, very red eyes.
And super creeped out.
They've never asked to watch it again. But when characters die on screen, they don't really get it. We were watching the movie, I don't know if it's called Klaus or Klaus, the Netflix animated.
On Netflix?
Yeah. Which I thought was a delightful movie. We all quite enjoyed it. But there's a moment at the very end, spoiler alert, where a character is very clearly being called away to his death. He's an old man and like sets down the axe he's using and says, I'm coming, and like walks into the light and disappears. Mm-hmm. And then other characters are left bereft, can't find their friend and have to come to terms with his death. And they both get turned. I was choking up. Mm-hmm. And my kids looked at me and said, what happened?
Oh, no.
And I said, oh, he died. And they said, what? So in fact, we got out of Frozen 2 and I mentioned how we were talking about the parts that were, because I teared up a couple times in this movie. One of them was when Olaf died, and I mentioned that in the car, and one of my kids said, "Olaf died? When did Olaf die?" So somehow they've calibrated it just right to where two fairly active viewing children have no idea that that's what they're actually seeing on screen.
I mean, I get that in like rewatching things as an adult, and particularly I'm thinking kids' books and kids' movies where tragic things happen and I didn't register it before. Or I knew it, but it wasn't what it was about. You know, thinking, listening to the first Frozen, like when the parents died, I remember watching it with our mother, and she was like, "What is this? Why are we watching this? How? Why is this what everyone loves?" But because that's not what it's about, it just kind of, you can go past it.
Right,
I also, as you know, I knew Olaf wasn't going to stay dead.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
What else? Okay. The other thing that I really liked, or my other favorite thing.
Yeah.
The bridge metaphor.
Oh,
To give Anna and Elsa both a role in the magic and in the balance of the world.
Yes.
And I think there are things as a result of that that I also liked. I love that Anna becomes the queen and blah, blah, blah. So it's not that I'm not mentioning everything. I'm saying the metaphor and then what springs from it. Because I was feeling going into it, like, what is this going to be for Anna? Because in the last one, she had to save, like, it had to be her to save the day.
Right.
But if the powers are under control and someone else has the powers, what are you doing here? So I thought that was, it felt creative, but also true. It fit really nicely for me. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. What did you think of Elsa's transformation? Because it ties in with that. And I my feelings have not fully settled on that. And yet in the moment, I was very moved by it. Because Elsa's transformation is such a key thing to the first movie. What did you think about how they handled it this time around?
I thought, it's like that scene. We're doing that scene again. And I'm waiting to watch your daughter choreograph it and take her glove off at the right moment.
And wear her pantsuit. Yeah.
Yes. Again, all the water stuff and the water horse and all that, which I associate with that part of it.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch again. Really? Like, it's just, there's such struggle, but I think transformation, there's struggle in, like, so like, I see what they're doing and I can appreciate it without wanting to watch it every day.
Right.
It's a sequel. So I had seen, it was a different transformation before, but I didn't, I don't know. It just didn't, it's not what I'm going to remember. And I don't know if I'm supposed to.
That's interesting. Cause I think it is the thing I'm going to remember. The idea that the first transformation, that Elsa's transformation in the first Frozen movie has to do with her, as the song says, letting go of these expectations for her. And this transformation has to do with coming into her own in some way, that it's she's let go, but she hadn't really found, she was still trying to be everything to everybody. And she has to realize that she just has to be herself for herself and follow that. And I feel like I thought that was a cool, you know, like, where do you go after you've done the let it go is a real question. And because you've already
into
done
the
that,
unknown is into the unknown, answer.
Yes, exactly. And it's not going to have the same impact, I think, because you've already had let it go. Already let it go. So, you know, now you have to land somewhere. And that's a more complicated thing. And I thought this threaded that needle the best that it could. I'm not sure one could do a better job than that. If it is a little bit less satisfying because I've had the catharsis of let it go in that first movie, which, you know, still I'll watch as many times as I've heard that song, I will happily put it on in the car again for the kids. I do not get tired of let it go in the way that parts of the movie I do. And, you know, they've not asked for these for these songs in the car.
Yes. So that was what I wanted to talk about next.
Okay.
Because Into the Unknown is the only song title I know. Uh-huh. I could not sing it for you right now. In fact, I could not sing you anything from that movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they are bad songs. I also don't think they are animated kids' movie songs. As a huge, Broadway musical fan,
yes,
the Broadway style, I felt like they were theatrical in that way more. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. There was more like storytelling, and I don't know, they felt stagey to me.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And again, I don't remember them. So like, I will walk around humming "Reindeer are better than people," and also if you asked your daughter right now what my favorite song is, it's the ones the trolls sing the original.
Yeah.
So cute. So funny. I don't remember any of the songs.
The only one that gets that my daughter does sing, and she sings all the time to herself, usually songs of her own making. But when she's working on her art, she's singing to herself, playing with her dolls. She's singing to herself. When she's chasing after her brother, she sings to herself. When she's asleep, she sings to herself, often in Spanish. She sings the no dialogue series of notes that calls Elsa away. And that's the part she'll sing to herself. Just those, that's the cycle of notes, which is really interesting because she's seen the movie twice now.
I was going to ask how many times.
Yeah. And, that's the part when I do see her playing Frozen, that's often the part that she's playing is Elsa being called away and having to search for what's calling to her, which is kind of cool. I mean, that sense of there being something out, again, into the unknown, of there being something out there, I think does key into something that kids, who are between 3 and 7 are maybe beginning to broaden their view of the world a little bit and realize that there is something cool, maybe something cool out there that's calling to them, in some way. And so that's the part that's earwormed for her. But yeah, none of the other songs, I couldn't tell you any of the, I remember hearing them,
right?
But I don't remember what they are.
Yeah. And I didn't, that was the, I think the Olaf's all this will be normal when I'm older.
Yeah.
It just bothered me. Cause then why did you become a child? Like, why did you become something that cared about time? I don't know.
Yeah.
Boggled the mind.
It brought up more existential questions than maybe the character needed to be dealing with.
It's true. It's true. Other highlights or lowlights for you?
I thought that everybody in my party left the theater feeling fairly satisfied by the movie. Mm-hmm. I was surprised that everybody, maybe all three of the people I saw the movie with, four of the people I saw the movie with, thought it was better than the first one walking out of the theater. Now, it's not uncommon for children to feel that way.
Right. Because that's what they just saw.
Right. Exactly. When my son and I walked out of the most recent Star Wars movie, and he's like, "That was great." And I was like, I just did not give him my opinion. I said, "Yeah, what was your favorite part?" Like, we just sort of kept going, because kids like what they just saw.
Right.
But they're at
a movie, right?
And they're at a movie.
We got to go to a movie today.
Yeah,
that's huge.
Exactly. I cannot quite fathom it from the adults. And I've heard this more than once from adults who've gone with kids who said, they thought it was better than the first one. And I think maybe it's because they've been so overexposed to the first one that the new one feels fresh.
They just needed new content. Yeah.
Right. Whereas I was like, I enjoyed this movie. And yeah, I did. It did affect me emotionally in some places because I'm a sucker. Mm-hmm. But it's not because it was – I think the first one was so clean and cohesive as a movie, as a story. And this felt a little jumbled and a little mishmashed and a little sort of thrown together and a little cash grabby, as you say. Like everybody's got to have new outfits because we have to sell new toys.
Right.
It's like, oh – okay, I get it. I understand that this is the commerce that we live in 2019, but it didn't it didn't do it for me. Mm-hmm. Have you talked to other people who've seen the movie? Do you get a sense everybody feels the way that we do, or are we the outliers here?
Oh, that is a great question. I think you're assuming I talk to many more people than I do. what I wanted to say was that was exactly what you just said was exactly what Josh said when he, at the end of it as well, that, the first one was tight and clean and, and you meet the people and then they have a goal together in this cause they split everybody up and everyone had their own journey, which I get for the sake of their characters they needed to have. And I enjoyed them having it. But I think it made the whole thing a much looser weave, if you will.
Yeah.
What do other people think? I work with college students, and they are adults. They're not children. However, I think there is, to some extent, the I got to go to a movie that is similar to children. So whatever they've come, whatever they just went to midnight movies for, on Monday morning is the best movie.
Right, you know what I mean? Right. Yes, so, I do. Yes.
So I'm not, I don't know if I find them reliable at this point. And I don't talk to that many people with kids because I hate kids. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
What did you have a sense of think?
As I look on Metacritic, which rounds up, aggregates critic scores of movies, out of 100, it has a 64, which feels maybe a little high. Like this feels like a gentleman 64, maybe. or a gentle lady 64, a gentle person 64. And I am pleased to see that things like Little Women have a 91.
Right.
You know, so that feels maybe about where the consensus is, which is that, yeah, this is a good movie. It's not great. It's not better than the first one. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I need to watch it a bunch more times.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you will, but.
I feel like that's I was surprised by talking to so many anecdotally to people who are not film critics or in the film business who have kids, especially who feel like this is better than the first one, because I don't get that.
Yeah, I think that's a psychological thing, not a quality thing.
Yeah. What's that thing where you've been kidnapped and you – Stockholm syndrome?
Yes.
Is that what that – yeah, something like that. That may be a bad analogy, but
– I think so.
Okay. I withdraw it then.
Okay. Hey, Tobin.
Hey, Isra.
Do you want to play a game?
I desperately want to play a game.
Excellent. Do you want to keep this recording and I just bring in the guest?
Yeah. Okay. I think you should just bring in the guest.
Please. Hold on.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Gentlemen, are you ready for a game?
Yeah,
I'm ready for a game.
Let's do this.
This game is called Into the Unknown.
Fitting title.
Thank you. Okay, so I will ask you a series of questions with multiple answers. You give the answer that you feel is correct.
All right.
I will tell you there are correct answers.
Okay. So what you feel is wrong, potentially.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay.
Got it. Okay.
So who do you think would make the best pen pal? Belle or Rapunzel?
Oh, Belle's more red. I would say Belle.
Okay, I'm going to say Rapunzel because she's stuck in that tower and she's probably perfected the art of pen palling.
That is correct. The answer is Rapunzel.
Yeah, I think she's too sheltered. She's not going to have anything interesting to say.
Quality. Okay. Who would you take on a road trip with your entire family? Aurora or Jasmine?
I mean, Aurora doesn't have much of a personality. I mean, that's a problem with that whole movie in general, is none of the characters have much of a personality, except for the villain, who's totally cool. So, I mean, she's not going to offend anybody because she's super boring. So, Aurora, I guess.
Okay. I'm going to say Jasmine because she has a magic carpet. We could get there faster.
Oh, that's an excellent point, Tobin. But Josh got that point.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great answer. That's you zigged and zagged on that. I didn't know that's where you were going to land when you started. That was impressive.
Who would be the better science class partner? Pocahontas or Ariel?
Pocahontas. I'm going to say, oh God, I'm going to say Ariel.
I'm sorry, the answer is Pocahontas. Ariel didn't even know what a fork was.
Yeah, that was in Dinklehoppers. Come on.
Oh, yeah, okay.
All right. Score is 2-1. We have two questions left. Tobin, if you lose this question, you have lost the game.
Okay. Match point.
Okay.
Rooting for you,
Tobin. So we'll let Tobin answer first. Who would you call? I can't read my own writing.
Ghostbusters.
Correct answer.
Oh, okay. Got it. Sorry. It looked like it says your head exploded, and that was not what I wrote.
Well, you wouldn't be calling me.
Who would you call if you had car trouble? Snow White or Tiana?
Oh, who would I call if I had car trouble? I'm going to call Snow White because she could get the forest creatures to send to get help.
She doesn't know what a car is. That's a terrible answer. That's got to be Tiana.
I'm sorry. The answer is Snow White.
How is it Snow White?
Because she has 7 friends.
Fair point. Okay.
Any of whom could come pick you up.
Oh, boy. Okay. So I'm still in this now. We're tied.
Tie game.
Woo.
Final question. Who would you pick for your paintball team? Merida or Mulan?
Oh, boy. Mulan animated or Mulan from the upcoming live action Disney release?
Well, since the live action is still upcoming, I have to imagine that, you know, we go with the data we have. Right?
I was just asking. Okay. Okay.
All right.
I'm going to say, wait. Where are we paintballing?
On Saturday with the other grown-up nerds.
But is this in a forested area or an urban setting? You know, one of those like building settings. Because if it's forested, I'm going with Merida because she runs around the woods with her bow and arrow. But if it's urban, I'm going to go with Mulan because she has the big final showdown in like the capital city.
That seems like such an odd place to draw that line.
Just looking for evidence.
I'm going to go with Merida just because she's the archer and therefore the more skilled ranged tactician. Yeah.
Now Mulan shoots a lot of arrows in the live action. That's all I'm saying. See my problems here? I've got a lot of problems. I got a lot riding on this here. Okay, so I'm also gonna say Merida, so we either rise or fall together.
Okay. Well, interesting you do choose that. The game remains tied. The answer is obviously Mulan because I wrote the quiz.
Yeah, I figured it could have gone that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I agree that the archery of Merida is the better choice. But of course, Mulan is always the choice, now and forever.
You gentlemen tied.
Thank you so much for playing.
It's a draw.
Yay.
It's a rare tie game.
Well, thank you.
Well played,
sir.
Well played. Thanks for the game, Isla.
You're welcome.
Now's the time in a podcast where we decide if this movie is progressive or regressive. Is this a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? Aislinn, what say you?
Here's what's funny. I forgot to think about this. It's just occurring to me now that I have to answer this question. Here's what. Some of the things you mentioned at the beginning of our program, the box office records, the amount of money, all that, I think, with so many awesome women behind the camera and behind the microphones. I think it has to be a step forward. I don't know that it's a giant step forward. But certainly it's not, I don't find it regressive. What do you think?
I love that's the shallowest of progressives. I don't find it regressive. Yeah, I agree. I feel like the so many of the characters, men and women in this movie, are given their moments to shine and are allowed to express their feelings and find themselves and to move forward. And the fact that it there, even if we've had movies with large, with broader rosters of women in charge, that the women who are in charge in this movie are centrally in charge to the way this movie is made, I think is progressive. So I will agree with you as well. Aislinn, what are we going to watch next?
Next, we are going to watch the new interpretation of Little Women coming to you on January 28th.
Yay. I can't wait. I'm very excited.
Now, just to warn everyone, inevitably, I'm going to talk a lot about Christian Bale
when we do that,
because the 1995 Little Women was profoundly important in my life. And it wasn't 95, but it was early 90s. But it was the Christmas of 94 that was very, I'll tell you, tune in next time and you'll hear how important Christian Bale was to me at that time.
And that movie, also directed by a woman, Gillian Armstrong, made that movie, a filmmaker that I've always admired. So we could do that one with it too, if you want to do a joint.
When I talk about it.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, Tobin, if people want to tell you how much they enjoy listening to me on the podcast, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter occasionally at Tobin Addington. All one word. Aislinn, where can people find you?
It's a great question. Also, reluctantly on Twitter at SassyNerdMT. If you enjoy the sound of my voice, you could also find me on the short series podcast I did on this very network called Why Aren't We All? There are 7 episodes of that. So please enjoy that.
Yay. Yeah, please do.
And you can find us on Twitter at contenders_pod or on Patreon at thecontenderspod.com. Special thanks to our members who joined at the marquee level or above, Sean Flynn and Jeff Addington.
We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can explore all their great shows at cageclub.me, and you can keep tabs on all the Cage Club happenings on Twitter at Cage Club Pod. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'm Tobin Addington.
I'm Aislinn Addington, and we'll see you next time on The Contenders. All right. What do we do now?
Now is the time. Oh, we end our game. We say thanks for the game. Thanks for the game, Aislinn.
You're welcome.